Welcome back to the new you, Life After Loss to Suicide. This would be episode 15. I'm Trisha.
And I'm Dawn.
And this week we have two guests with us. We have April Joy, who is actually my sister-in-law, as well as Heaven Proyle, who's my niece. We're just going to touch base with them on, I guess, the ins and outs of living after this trauma. Both of them are on the fire departments and have to go out on calls in answer to these sorts of things. So they get to deal with some of the trauma that you do as well. So we don't really have a script for today. We're just going to kind of bounce around and see where they're at as far as their own mental health, what they've dealt with, how they're dealing with it, and what they see in other people.
So girls, I guess if you want to start with some of the things that I guess you've been maybe struggling with or seeing that have affected you personally.
I would say things that have affected me personally would be the massive blow what happened with Morgan, and then having to repeat that every time I went out on that call. With COVID, the suicides happened very frequently. There was a call almost every other day that we had to go get somebody and process what was going on. And I was actually the mental health representative at my work. And I think at that time it was too trying for me to be that person for other people. I actually ended up stepping down from it. And I ended up in therapy because I was not coping with this. I would be the strong person. I would not let myself feel what I should have been feeling. So my advice was, don't be the strong person. Let yourself feel what's going on. Let yourself cry. If you don't, it's just going to eat you inside.
So can you explain like some of the signs that you knew you needed that help or that you needed to step down in particular?
My boss actually tattled on me. She saw all the signs, and she's actually a really good friend of mine. And she saw the exhaustion, the staying away from people. I was sleeping very frequently, and I had actually called into work a couple times, and she told me it's time to get help, and she actually turned me into our company nurse. So I was ignoring those signs. I obviously know what those are because we have to look at them with patients' perspectives, but I was ignoring them because I didn't want to believe that it was me. And then she tattled on me, and it was by far the best thing that ever happened. If you see somebody going through this and you have a way to help them, that help, tattle. Do it, because you don't know what's going to be their next step.
Were you angry at her at first for doing that?
A little bit, but it was the best thing for me.
And I think that's important too, because I think there's an anger that comes with it, because that, at least in my personal opinion, you feel like there might be some weakness there and you don't want to be that weak person or that weak link. But really, if you're not on the game, you're not in the game either. You need to be on top of it to help your patients. So
that's exactly right. If you are not in the right mental state, you can make a mistake that could be just lethal to somebody.
I think, Dawn, you probably get the same thing when you're out on calls. You're very close with your squad, and they tend to check on you quite often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
They're amazing.
It really is a family.
So I think April may not have, you know, she didn't probably have to go out on as many calls as
right.
Heaven did. I know they had a couple because April is in a lot smaller community than Heaven. So they had a couple that her and my brother both are on the squad. And so she does more of the damage control at home after the calls, you know, because my brother will go out and he's the big strong guy that internalizes it. And then he falls in a pile later. So she has to pick up that mess. So April, what are some of the things you've had to struggle with since Morgan?
I've had to struggle with trying to cope as far as dealing with it on top of trying to pick up the pieces of my children and my husband. Jamie has had a very hard time coping without Morgan. So, you know, there's nights where he just wants to drink, and then he, you know, makes the comments like he has no purpose and he wants to be with her. And so I have to remind him, you know, there is a purpose, and we have a little boy that we have to make sure he remembers her and knows who she is. And he doesn't want to put us through the situation that we are going through now. You know, that's more devastating, is the aftermath. You know, everybody goes through that. I don't want to be here. You know, things might be better without me, but realistically, when it's all said and done, you are, your family is left picking up pieces and trying to mend that heartbreak and that loss of every single sign that, you know, you thought you seen, but you didn't know what to do, or, you know, question kind of how to help them without making them angry and not talking to you and trying to help give that extra motivation or advice. So it's kind of, that's the hard part.
It's hard to see them hurting the way that they are. And but then when they mask it with alcohol, they're not going to deal with it the way that they need to.
He's in counseling now and has to talk about it. And he's better, but, you know, he still has his moments. And everywhere he goes, he either finds a feather or he finds a quarter that she leaves. And I think it's that reassurance that, you know, he needs to figure out how to come to terms with it and how to get past it. Not that it's easy to get past, but.
I think that's one of the things we had talked about in an early show is people don't understand how far reaching one suicide is. Remember we talked about if you put rings on every suicide in the United States and how many people that one suicide touches, they would all end up overlapping each other. So, yes, it was Morgan that killed herself, but you have Heaven, and it's affecting her job and the people outside of her job, and then it's affecting my sister, Heaven's mom, and her job, and then April and her entire family. So April's kind of got it. I guess we all kind of get it from every side. Jamie had an immense struggle, and at first it wasn't alcohol. It's trying to deal with alcohol, and then you realize early on, like, I can help. He went to help, and they diagnosed him with a major depressive disorder. And so he's on medication, and he's getting the treatment he needs. So he's evolving a little bit. But also, April has two daughters all of our kids were really close, but they've struggled immensely. Like, Jackie has a TBI, traumatic brain injury, so she processes things differently. But her and Morgan were extremely close. When Jackie was in the hospital, Morgan stayed and took care of her for months and months. And so that was like a piece of Jackie left. So she got super quiet and very withdrawn and internalized it all and kind of separated herself from the family all, you know, for a long time. She's finally coming back, but Haley, her oldest,
has tried it.
Has had to commit her a couple times and has had some really, really down times with some other events in life, and then Morgan capitalized everything. They had to make a decision, and I think Haley made part of that decision. Like, Haley knew where she was at, and she made it. She's like, Mom, I need help. I'm going to sign myself in. And so she signed herself into a psych ward, which is not, you know, you take patients there, it's terrifying.
It's scary to even see your kid in there. She called and she was like, you can come see us or come see me. And I was like, okay. And we get in there, and I think the chairs are so heavy, you can't move them. And it's just, it's a very scary thing. But I think in the same aspect, it's to prevent them from doing any harm to themselves as well or to somebody else. But that's hard to watch. And she had told Morgan after she had done it, committed herself. And Morgan says, don't you ever do that again. If you need somebody to talk to, you talk to me. So I think that part was hard that, you know, Morgan was yelling at her and telling her, you know, if there's a problem, you need to tell me. But Morgan couldn't seek the same treatment as she was preaching, and I think that's, you know, hard for the family as well.
That was a hard pill for everybody, because Morgan was always Paige's savior. Like, she called, Mom, go get her. She's going to do something down, or Haley's going to do something down, or Jackie's in a bad spot, or, you know, but for her to verbalize it for herself, and for, that's part of also, you know, after talking to several doctors, that's part of the postpartum psychosis. They get to a point where it's no longer depression, and it's psychosis, and it's all an internalized thing, and she probably didn't even have the whereabouts to verbalize it at that point. You know, it was to the point where for her, there was no going back. There was no saying something to somebody to get help. And that's hard to think that we all functioned around her. We saw her and we didn't pick up on her.
Postpartum depression is hard because, so I had it after Jackson. And there was times where I was like, I'm ready to just drive in front of the semi. I don't care. Like, I just can't do it anymore. And finally, you know, I just went to the doctor and was like, these thoughts are driving me insane. I can't keep thinking this way, especially when my kids are in the car. And it wasn't to hurt them. It was just, you know, it's a random thought. And so I went and got help, and, you know, I got past that. But, you know, like, Morgan didn't really say that, you know, she was feeling that way to a lot of people. And I think, you know, she would have reached out, talked a little bit more about postpartum. She would have had, you know, more of a support system that said, you know, these are things we felt, and, you know, maybe she could, you know, get in touch with a friend, or, you know, somebody that was going through it, you know, themselves, to help her as well. So
I think that could be an aspect of it, though. Like Heaven said, she worked in the healthcare profession. She knew. She had worked in it, and she helped care for those people. So she knew kind of what she was dealing with. But being in that profession, I think maybe there comes heavier shame with that, because you feel like you should be above that, or you should know these things, or it shouldn't happen to you because you're aware. And I think maybe she didn't want to say.
There is a lot of shame in it. When you're in that healthcare field, you are around suicidal people all the time, and it gets draining after a while. And if you become that suicidal person, the people around you are mad. They're mad because they're like, why didn't you get help before? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? And there are so many times that they will ignore it completely because they don't want that, you know, all those questions. They don't want everybody to get involved in it. But you're friends with all those people.
And you think possibly that you can handle it. Do you think that, Dawn, like, you'd be less likely to ask for help because you know what you're doing?
Yeah and no. I mean, I think I have certain people I'd probably go ask more so. But yeah, I consider myself that strong person, and I expect that I'm going to know how to handle things, and I don't always. So part of that's my ego as well. Thank you for sharing your story, because I think it's important for people to hear. I mean, we've been talking as mothers, but I think it's important to see the ripple effect that it has in a family. It's not just, you know, the moms and dads and the brothers and sisters. It's the aunts and the uncles and the cousins and the neighbors and the friends and the community that really suffer from a loss. And I guess our motto has always been, we want to help anybody that we can in sharing this journey. So thanks for being part of that journey.
Thank you.
So for you guys, so you're on the outside of the ring, you know, you watch everything that happens. How hard is that to sit on the outside and see, like, me and the kids, or to see how bad your mom is or how bad Jane is? And do you notice in yourselves, like, you notice you need help, but do you ever feel like, gosh, I need some help, I'm taking care of everybody else?
I guess I feel more held back as far as that goes. I'm more worried about making sure they get the help that they need, because, you know, I've had loss that has hurt part of it. And it's not just the suicide loss. I mean, it was family loss that was devastating. But, you know, my kids have not had that kind of a loss in their life to know how to cope with it. And with Jamie, because Jamie and Morgan, they had a birthday a day apart, and so every year they kind of celebrated together. So it was more, that was his birthday buddy, his best friend, you know, he was there for everything. And, you know, he loved her unconditionally, just like he would love his kids. So, you know, I'm kind of trying to get them the help they need and focus on them. And I think once I feel that they have gotten the help that they need, then I will be able to get the help that I need.
Super but, healthy, right, Dawn? Yeah.
Maybe at it's the same healthy, time.
I have my moments, you know, I cry in the shower or I cry, you know, every once in a while, but, you know, I let my emotions out. I talk with Jamie, you know, when he's hurting, I express I'm hurting. So we're communicating and working on it together. So it's not that I'm not getting help. It's just I'm focusing more on them. And I think when I'm focusing on them and trying to help them, I'm not concerned, I guess, about myself.
She's doing what, parents thing. What we just talked about, the busy thing. Keep yourself busy and take care of everybody else.
Yep.
You know, and my mother-in-law, she has a hard time, and there's days where she cries, and, you know, you just have to console them. And Trisha, you know, she'll call, and she's crying and upset, but, you know, you have to have that strong person in your backpack, pretty much, that, you know, will be there and, you know, not necessarily cry, but just be, like, consoling and being there and not making them feel like, you know, I'm worthless because I'm crying and I don't want people to see me this way. You know, they have to let that out and have somebody to talk to as well. So that's kind of where I'm at with it at the moment.
That's a reaction for everybody, right? You want to, you know, she has to take care of everybody in her house. And that's what we were talking about this morning, is we are always those people. We take care of everybody. And if you don't take care of yourself, your cup goes empty. You know, at some point, so we'll have to stay until April to do that. But and I know I tried to get my mom on here today, but I don't think she's having any of it. But for her, it's got to be tenfold because she's watching me. So she's dealing with her daughter that has a devastating loss, and then she lost her granddaughter, and then she's looking at her other two children that are falling apart, and then their spouses, and then her grandchildren. Like, her whole world is falling apart there. And I think Heaven and Morgan had a different dynamic. Like, they were probably the two closest in age that we have of all the grandkids. But they're like fire and ice. they were best friends when they were little, but they all just fought like cats and dogs. And it brutal, you know, teenage girl fighting. Oh, terrible. And I think when Morgan passed, Heaven went through a phase where she felt guilt about that. And who their personalities were, like, oh, I wish I wouldn't said that. And I went through that too, like, every time I spanked her, or every time I grounded her, or every time she got in trouble. What if I didn't? Well, if I didn't do that, she would have been huge ass. But, you know, you always second guess or you question the things you did. And I think Heaven got to actually talk to Angie, and Angie kind of gave her a little perspective on that.
Yeah, I did talk to Angie, but there was a lot of self-blame after that. For a while there, I was thinking, we were talking about me coming down to her house and spending a day with her and walk her, and we never made that time. I never made that time. I never took off work to go do it. And I was really thinking to myself after it happened, if I would have went down there, would I have noticed something? Would I have noticed that she's not being herself? Would I have noticed that something is wrong? Could I have stopped it? And with us being so close, I might have been able to do it. We lived with each other for a while. We hung out with each other all the time. Maybe I would have seen something that other people weren't.
But that's also the people they hide it the best from.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, and you may not have.
Right.
Yes, but that's still in my head.
It's a human reaction.
It's always going to be in my head. Would I have noticed it if I made that time? And that time is gone. I can't make that time up now.
But you have to also think. So when we had moved Morgan that weekend.
April and I spent the whole weekend.
We spent that time with her. And that's another thing, like, that drives Jamie crazy. Like, I should have been there. I should have been helping. I should have been moving. So I have to console that. But in the same aspect, after we moved her, we had conversations with different people. And we were sitting in the house. And she's like, I just can't do this anymore. Like, she had made weird comments. And I had said to Trisha, when we got done moving her, I said, she is going to stay with you all weekend, right?
Yep.
I mean, I had this weird inclination. She just was not okay. But then, you know, I'm like, well, Trisha's got her. She's fine. And then that night when Trisha called and said, have you seen her? Is she at your house? My heart stopped because I knew, like, I wanted to call her and see how she was because she had to drop Walker off. I didn't call her. So I have that right with you.
I think we all carry a certain amount of guilt. But look, like I said, we spent the whole weekend with her. And hindsight is where you see the weird things that she said, like that box of pictures that we still haven't found, which drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. We were in her dining room and we were moving her. And she said, Mom, take this box to your house. And I thought it was so bizarre. I'm like, why do you want me to take it to my house? Well, you're going to need them. Why I never said, why would I need them? There were pictures from high school and pictures of her and her friends. And she said, just take them. And I said, no, just take them. To this day, I don't know what the hell happened to that box of pictures. And it's frustrating. We tore apart the whole storage unit, my house, my son's house. We can't find them. She knew 3 days prior to when she was leaving that she was leaving. She had, that's what the move was about. That's, you know, I think she had given up. And she had all this stuff prepared, and we were with her. I mean, we didn't see it. Like, we knew she was sad. I just didn't know, like,
how devastating.
Now, thinking back, that freaking box of pictures was the answer to everything, and I missed it. Like, it flew so far over my head. And maybe that was her way of seeing, like, it's paying attention. And the day before, she said, don't let these two women, she named two women, don't let them raise my child. Well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Why would they raise your child? But it didn't ring a bell that day. Jeez, what was I thinking? Why would that not ring a bell?
And it didn't. You know, after she was gone, and we had to go find stuff at the house, and I found that notebook that she had started writing that letter, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know? And then Chance was there, and he seen it, and he's like, oh, we can't tell Mom. Like, he was freaking out. He was so worried about letting you know that she was laying in there writing this stuff while he's in the other room. And he was trying to figure out how he missed it as well, being right there. And she was up that morning at 3 o'clock in the morning writing this stuff. Like, you know, how do you miss things that are so important and so devastating for somebody that you love that I think we just all think that, yeah, they're just having a day and they're just upset today, but realistically, you know, they're having a lot more emotions and things going on.
And a lot of times we talk ourselves out of crying as well. And someone's like, and we were talking about, you said people ask you, oh, how are you doing? What is your answer? Living the dream. Obviously it's not a dream. Sometimes it's a nightmare, but that's everybody's reaction to answer. You know, somebody says, Heaven, how are you? And you're like, oh, I'm okay.
But I don't think you want everybody to know, like, yeah, today I'm having a bad day. I just don't want to be here anymore. I mean, that's, some people are so private about their lives. Like, I don't want everybody knowing that, yeah, my life is crazy some days. You know, then they want to get into it. Well, what's the matter with you? How's things going? Well, no, I don't really want to go into detail how crazy my life is.
And a lot of people don't know what to say when you say, I'm not okay. They just sit there stunned because everybody's answer is, I'm good, how are you? And then one day somebody says, well, I'm not very okay. And you just sit there, you're stunned.
They panic.
Different answer. And yeah, people do panic.
And then, of course, you internalize it like, oh, why would you do that? Look at, you just scared the hell out of everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something, part of what we talked about is normalizing the conversation that I'm not okay and this is how I'm feeling. I'm not feeling normal. And then unless we keep talking about it, it's never going to be normal for people. However, we are also two people that will fall into the same thing, living the dream.
Yep.
Well, like, no, I feel like shit today.
But how do you, you know, how do you ask a parent that has lost a child how they're doing? I mean, physically and emotionally, I think you guys are always in the back of your mind hurting. I mean, you're never having the best day of your life because your best day of your life was before that happened. So now you guys are sitting there having to cope. And so what is the best answer? Instead of crying and feeling emotional, you're trying to be strong and being like, fine, we're fine today. It's great day, you know?
I sometimes stumble on that. I'm like, oh, well, you know, as good as can be expected. And then, of course, then everybody feels like crap. And I'm like, way to go, Trisha. Way to go. I don't think there's any right answer. And it depends on what I'm doing. Like last night, I had an awkward moment like that. We're here camping in the town where I graduated high school. So obviously I'm going to see faces that I haven't seen since prior to her death. And we were sitting out by the camper, and this happens to be a guy I graduated high school. I went and graduated with his little sister, came up and was talking. Well, he also happens to be the father of one of Morgan's first long-term boyfriends that didn't end so well. But he's a very good guy. And
he means well.
He stopped to talk to my brother, and then like his eyes met mine, and I could tell that he was just figuring out how to get the hell out of here before he had to make some sort of conversation. And I didn't want to make him uncomfortable, and things didn't end with the two great. So, you know, but him and I had always been friends. And so Walker was fussing and crying and wanting to go to bed. So I had to walk past him, and his eyes were all shifty. And he says, hey, Trish, how you doing? And he said, hi, you know, good as can be expected, you know? And I said that, and then I thought, what do you say? And he looked at the ground, and I looked at the ground, and
it's like an awkward moment that you got to try and figure out how to get past.
But I also know Morgan spent an immense amount of time at their house, and he is a very sensitive guy. This is why I'm being happy, but he is. So I know that he felt it when she passed. So I'm sure he was uncomfortable and didn't know what to say. And, you know, it's all different dynamics than we thought we would have to deal with.
And I think it's okay. I mean, every day is different for me. I honestly have found peace with Brittany's decision. I know she was suffering, so it's hard to ask her to stay, I guess, when you're hurting that bad. So for me, I've just kind of gotten to the point where if it serves me no purpose, I try to let it go, and try being the key word. Because there are days that, I mean, days are emotional. And Trish and I just had this conversation on the last episode is, you know, every day is different. And depending on the situation, I mean, if I'm at the grocery store, and that's probably not a big deal, I'm not thinking about that anyway. If it's, you know, I'm at the grocery store and I'm buying stuff that was her favorite meal, well, that might be a whole different situation. And I think part of that for me too, I try to avoid some of those things that may trigger that. How long that lasts, I have no idea. I mean, we're still going through it, and I don't expect it to be this bad in 10 years, but I don't know because I'm not there yet. But I think it's important to let the people that need to know around us how we truly feel. And we kind of talk too, if they can accept it, great. If they can't, then maybe they shouldn't be part of our life anyway. And that's not a negative either way. It's just, it's a new person that we have become. And things are never going to be the same as what they were before. It just is what it is. And you either take that or you don't.
I don't know if I'm at where you're at with at peace with it. You know, some days I think, God, what her life must have been like, getting up every day and fighting that fight all day, every day. Like, how many days that she won the battle before she lost the one. And I think, God, how horrible had that happened for her? And would it be selfish for me to want her to be here? And some days I feel selfish, but other days I feel like I want her here and I want her to be whole and better. But you can't change that. So it is, it's an up and down battle. But
she is with you, and she is whole, and she's good. It's just a different.
It is.
And all the firsts are terrible, you know. First birthday, you know, or first Christmas without her, first birthday without her, all that kind of stuff. Her favorite songs, all of those things, like, it doesn't matter where you are, you know, you think about it. Trisha didn't want to celebrate, you know, Mother's Day or Christmas or anything like that. And I think we kind of pushed her into it because eventually you have to get past that first, you have to get past that second, and if you don't even try and do the first one, you know, that second one is going to be like the first one, and it's going to be that painful. And, you know, if you're in the grocery store and you hear a favorite song, it's, I think it's hard to hold back tears or not think about them. So I think there's always going to be that emotional attachment, you know, when thinking about them. And
we talked about that empty chair syndrome, part of a lot of that trauma when you, because I did at first, I avoided family functions. I avoided, you know, like this camping with my whole family like there this weekend. That wasn't something that I wanted to do last year, because when you bring everybody into one place, that empty spot becomes more evident because it is so empty, and it's empty for everybody. When you're off doing your own thing and there's not everybody there, you can kind of get a little bit of break from that. I mean, she's always missing, but it's not so evident as when everybody's in one place at one time. And it's so thick that she's missing.
When we went camping, everybody in the family came. This is the spot where we grew up, when we went camping, where we're at today, where we would go to pond, we would ride to town, we do so many things when we were kids, and she's not here, and it's hard.
We had up this morning, and Jim and I took Walker on some of the foot trails, and I was thinking when I was walking to myself that these foot trails in this park, they still do it, but when the kids were little, we would come out and they would do a haunted house on the foot trails of the campground for Halloween, and that was Morgan's absolute favorite time to camp, and so I'm walking through there with Walker. I'm getting all choked up, and Jim's looking at me like I've lost my mind, and I shook my head no. Just leave it in there. It just needs to stay in there or whatever. But this is the park where my kids grew up, and this is where they went swimming all the time and fishing. This is where they learned to kayak. So that's what we'll be doing today, is we're all going out kayaking. But I do, a picture popped up on my Facebook the other day of Morgan, in which she first got her first kayak, was here at this place, and she was kayaking. She was so awkward.
You should put her picture on the kayak. Take her out with you.
I never thought about that. That's a good idea. Let's take her thing. That is a great idea.
Thank you. Now I'm spent for the week.
Tapped out. My one good idea. Yeah, we could do that. So it's bittersweet. Like, we're going to go do something she loves to do. And it's very aware that she's missing. However, this will also be the first time Walker has done kayaking. Got his new life jacket, and we're going to. We'll see who tips over trying to get him to stay in the kayak, because it's going to happen. Stay in the shallow for a while. I said, whoever's getting him's got to be agile, and I admit. I tried to get Paige to come. She has to work this afternoon. She's like, I'm not doing it. So, I mean, ripples, I guess, is a big word for it. Every loss has ripples in it. Even on the days that we're lost in ourselves so much, those ripples go through everybody, and it's easy to forget that they hit everybody. They hit everybody differently. But they're still there, and it's kind of nice sometimes. It's nice sometimes to know that other people are that miss the girls, but then again, that also sometimes adds to me to see how much everybody else is hurting because they miss the girl.
But it's also a great way to keep her memory alive, too, and keep her present. Mm-hmm. So
we noticed when we all get together, and it's not my stepdad is, how old is he?
74.
That means I'm getting old. 74, and he by no means has he lost his mind. He's still fairly sharp. But Walker looks and acts so much like Morgan when she's little. It's a reflex. He doesn't even think through it. He calls her Morgan, and Walker will answer to it. And it's like, stop it. Me and April are like, no, don't do that. And he doesn't even realize he's doing it, but Walker answers him. So it's like, what the hell? Go for it.
That's awesome.
But it's sometimes that's just like a, huh, she's here, you know?
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, it is bittersweet. There's still good times to be had.
Absolutely. And they would want us to be sharing those good times, so.
I don't doubt that she'll flip one of us over today. Probably haven't, because that's how they hold.
Probably. I was just thinking that. She's going to flip me over.
That's for not showing up.
It's what?
That's for not showing up at her house.
You're okay. Yeah. She's probably got a lot of stuff. She knows as fun as this work. But we appreciate you guys coming on today and just kind of sharing ins and outs of everyday life. This is just what we do. So everybody else can hear it and feel like they're not out there alone. They're not, it's the same for everybody. And unless we get everybody talking about it, it's just going to keep happening.
Right. Stop the stigma. All right. Well, thank you guys again. We appreciate having you on and sharing your story with us as well. So until next time, if you would like to visit our Facebook page, The New You, Life After a Loss to Suicide, we'd love to hear from you, and take care, and we'll see you soon.
Also, remember, if there's anybody interested in coming on and sharing their story, we would absolutely love to hear that. So just drop us a quick message.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
If you or someone you know is in crisis or struggling with mental health or suicidal thoughts, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. Again, that's 1-800-273-8255. You can also find resources at suicidepreventionlifeline.org.